Welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. I'm publisher Ryan Burns, and joining me, as always, is one of the elite NDSU minds in all the country, Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, I think the theme of this podcast is going to be the comeback kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Basketball had a big one on Friday, and then football had what could almost be considered a season-saving one on Saturday afternoon, so that was big, for sure.
So why don't we just jump in right away to the basketball as the Bison had their first two games of the season here. Kicked off on the road against UC Davis and then also on the road against Illinois. And unfortunately, they couldn't get it done against the Illini there late in the game. But let's start with the UC Davis game specifically. The Bison down 9 with 3 minutes to play. They had quite the stops to force overtime and then got it done. What'd you think of the Bison?
Well, I thought it was very impressive. You know, as we discussed, UC Davis was a good team. They were 14-2 in their league last year. This was definitely going to be a mid-major matchup worth taking a look at with how successful North Dakota State was last year. Davis was in control of the game for most of play, but with 3 minutes left, as you said, the Bison were down 9. And they got 14 consecutive defensive stops. So that obviously, you know, counts getting the game tied and sending it into overtime and then in overtime as well. In fact, Davis only had 2 points in the overtime period as the Bison won by a pretty wide margin in OT.
Yeah, one of the stars of the game, I thought, was junior forward Dexter Warren. He was very efficient from the floor. What did you see out of Dexter against UC Davis?
Well, you know, Dexter, it's very similar, you know, to how he went at Gonzaga in that March Madness game and how he's kind of evolved as a player. Lots of hustle points. He's got a very wide frame that he uses to turn a lot of jump shots into offensive rebounds. And it's not, you know, put back tip slams or anything like that, but clearing out, grabbing offensive boards, laying them back in are an easy way to efficiently score points and rack up the rebound totals. And he was all over the place. His line is very impressive in the box score with 16 points, 12 boards, 3 assists, a block, and a steal. Getting it done on both ends and in every way, you know, imaginable or recordable on the stat sheet. So that was extremely impressive, and that was a big win to kind of set the tone for the season out in California.
Yeah, and it looked to be carrying over to Champaign, Illinois on Sunday, where the Bison held an 11-point halftime lead over the Fighting Illini there of Illinois, and unfortunately the Illini then scored 52 points in the second half, and the Bison gave up a 14-point lead. What did you think of NDSU's play at Champaign?
Well, it was rough, and you know, a lot of the fans will point to just how much NDSU has been relying on the three-point shot. It was falling, falling in the first half and then not going in the second half, and that's all well and good, but you know, basic basketball analytics will tell you that the most efficient way to score is either a three-pointer or a layup. The mid-range game is just not as efficient, so I actually have zero problems with the way that Coach Richmond's offense operates. I have no problem, with good shooters like Paul Miller jacking it up and as often as he wants. And Malik Clements seems to have a heck of a stroke from three as well, but it's just difficult. You know, the Bison were up 11 and a half, appeared to be the better team for most of the game, pushed it to 14. Illinois dropped it to a 5-point lead, and the Bison were able to crank it back out to 10 again with less than 10 minutes left to play in the fourth quarter, or excuse me, in the second half. Well, the 10-minute mark would make it the fourth quarter, but yeah, that they just kind of collapsed, and I think maybe a little bit of that had to do with fatigue and you know, just that two-day swing of going from Pacific time zone all the way to Illinois. It was maybe difficult, but I'm not trying to make excuses for the Bison basketball team either. They lost a game that they probably shouldn't have lost against a high major opponent, which would have been, you know, something that these kids would remember, and certainly something that would help as far as the resume is concerned come potential seeding time.
Yeah, I hear you. Why don't we transition to the Bison's leading scorer through the first two games? That's Mr. Paul Miller, averaging 19.5 a game. What do you thought about Paul becoming the Bison's leading scorer?
Yeah, I mentioned Mr. Smooth, Paul Miller, quite a few times this season or in this preseason.
Is his new nickname going to be Peace Move instead of Jace Move?
I like Peace Move.
Are we going to get that to come on?
Yeah, I like Peace Move. I might use that. I might try and give that to the people and see if they accept it or not. Paul's a really good player. You and I talked a little bit in the pre-show production about my opinion of his ability to create his own shot as opposed to just catch and shoot. I said before the season that he'll be the second leading scorer to A.J. Jacobson, and then I said after the exhibition game, scratch that, I think Paul will actually just go ahead and lead the team in scoring. And that certainly seems to be the path that we are currently on. 20 points against Davis, 19 against Illinois, 17 three-point attempts in two games. It would appear that Coach Richmond just grabbed that green light from Lorenz Alexander upon his graduation, said thank you, and went ahead and gave that green light right to Paul Miller. So he got the honorary green light and seems to be just, pulling whenever he sees is necessary. And to be honest with you, the stroke that kid has, that is fine with me.
Well, let's hope Peep Smooth can keep that going. We're going to get that to catch on here. If we do one thing right in this podcast today, it is Peep Smooth is going to become Paul Miller's new name. I like it. I like it a lot. So how about you tell us about the redshirting decisions that the Bison staff has chose to make, and what have you thought about the bench contributors so far?
Yeah, that was something that came out about a half an hour before the Davis game, that they were going to go ahead and redshirt Deng Gu. As you and I have talked, this is a kid that might be the most talented guy in the program. 6'8", 6'9", super athletic, has face-up game. I think his vertical leap takes him to be able to reach well over 12 feet. We saw some of that in the preseason testing. But he's also a guy that could use maybe some time in the weight room and a diet of steak and potatoes, a guy that could put on a little weight to his frame and really, once he comes to be a part of the program, be one of the better players in school history, and that's high praise, but he absolutely has the athletic talent and basketball acumen to give these Bison four really, really solid years from Deng. So the decision to redshirt him, not really all that surprising. Also, sophomore Evan Weisenberg is going to redshirt. He's a 6'7 post guy that doesn't handle the ball all that well, but he's very much in that Dexter Werner mold. Certainly not as wide as Dexter. Doesn't have that defensive end, tight end in football look to him, but at the same time, he's a post defender, a good rebounder, will get you a putback layup, things like that. They burned his redshirt last year, thought that they'd use him quite a bit. They didn't. They ended up going with the seven-man rotation. Weisenberg, to me, is a kid that should have been a five-year guy, and now he's going to. And he'll give the Bison 3 years of hustle and defense off the bench after this redshirt season for sure. Malik Clements, Spencer Lyson, and Kai Cabela seem to be the biggest contributors off the bench so far. Dylan Miller is the freshman big. It was between him and Gu that did not redshirt. He participated in both games, but at this point in the season, he's not giving as much off the bench as Eliason is at this point. And Clements and Cabelas, obviously, as I've talked about ad nauseum, the Bison are very similar in what they do from the 1-4 positions. So having guards, taller guards like Clements and Cabelas come in and play the 1-4 is not surprising to see them get a bunch of minutes. And both guys acquitted themselves nicely. In fact, Clements really got it going against Illinois and was part of the reason that the Bison outplayed the Illini for so much of that game.
My question for you is, do you think the Bison stick with this seven-man rotation they really have going through the first two games? Again, I understand it's a very small sample size, but seven guys are averaging over 22 minutes a game, and the next closest to that is Spencer Eliason at only 9 minutes. I mean, do you anticipate this seven-man rotation holding up throughout the season, or do you think we're going to see more of a guy like Spencer Elias and rotate in more and more?
Yeah, I think, you know, part of those numbers are skewed by the fact that the one goes into overtime when you just talk about minutes as a whole, but I understand, too. No, I think that they'll go with those eight, and Dylan Miller really does have a chance to progress and make it 8.5, but I think that is your eight. I don't anticipate it being seven whatsoever. You can't. You can't give Dexter all of the minutes at the five. Keep in mind too that Chris Kading is eventually going to contribute, and I would guess with his progression, you'll probably see him split this Wednesday against Valley City State, given that they're a Division II opponent that should not pose much of a challenge to the Bison, but that Wednesday following the game against the University of Montana, who's a very good program from the Big Sky, I would guess you'll see Chris Kading. And so between Kading, Eliason, and Miller, there are going to be both bigger lineups where they do go with a traditional two bigs and just more minutes of Dexter Werner sitting down.
Okay. Hey, I was just curious. I mean, again, not every day I get to, well, actually I do get to talk to you every day, but not every day you get to an elite NDSU basketball mind for the listeners to really take in. But so 1-1 off the start here, Ross, are you happy with the start?
Yeah, I mean, I think you had to kind of hope for a split, obviously, with Davis being a league champion and Illinois being in the Big Ten, and as little as you may or may not think of Illinois, that's still a tough ask, you know, for a Summit League program to win on the road, because those games are always on the road against a Big Ten opponent. So yeah, splitting against a league champion and a P5 school, you have to be happy about that, especially considering the way that last year started. Your Bison fans will remember that great Taylor Braun, Marshall Bjorklund, Trayvon Wright team all graduating, and this young group of Bison getting just pounded by Texas and Iowa in the first two games of last season. They lost to Texas by 35 and dropped a 31-point squeaker to Iowa to go 0-2 to start the season. So I'm not saying that this Illinois team and this Davis team is on the same level as Texas and Iowa were last year. They're probably not. But at the same time, to be competitive in both games, after losing Lawrence Alexander, and to split one and honestly dominate the other one for 30 minutes, you have to feel a lot better about this team early than you felt about last year's team early. And obviously, you know, at the end of last year, they were fighting Gonzaga in the NCAA tournament, which is, you know, which is great. So this team has not as far to go to get to where they want to be.
Last question for you on Bison basketball before we talk some recruiting is the home opener is on Wednesday, Valley City State. A D2 comes into Fargo. What are your expectations for the Bison's home opener?
I mean, obviously, you know, I think NDSU is going to roll. That game's at 7 o'clock on a Wednesday. I know that's kind of been a point of contention. A lot of NDSU's games are on Wednesdays, which in the upper Midwest and this good Lutheran country is technically church night, but that's kind of just the way that the NCAA has handed down this year's schedule. This game's at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. Don't expect a tight game, but if you want to see a lot of different kids play, if you want to see, you know, a lot of points from the Bison, it should be fun, and it should just be interesting to see these guys on their home floor for the first time in their final season at the Shields Arena. Ryan, you talked a little bit about recruiting. We've had some developments in the football side of things. We talked, you know, about basketball being kind of set in stone because of how young this team is, but football's got a lot of work to do with only 15 commitments this season.
Yeah, and they picked up their first preferred walk-on commitment of the year on Friday when Quinn Allo decided to stay in the state of North Dakota and commit to the Bison on a preferred walk-on over a partial scholarship from North Dakota, so Bison fans have to be happy about that. The story goes, and you can read it, I mean, on my commitment article on BisonReport.com, but the North Dakota offered him a partial scholarship on November 6th, and they said, you have a week to decide. And so, the Bison may or may not have heard about that and offered him a preferred walk-on, spot on the team on the 12th. So Quinn knew he had basically 24 hours to decide, do I want to go to North Dakota or do I want to go to NDSU? And from talking with him, it was an easy decision to turn down the money from UND to stay and go to NDSU. So Quinn is a guy that is going to be the fifth lineman in this offensive line class. Again, he's a preferred walk-on, and that means the staff has just asked him to walk on. He'll have to pay in-state tuition and all that, but he has a chance to earn a scholarship if he plays well. And he's a guy that projects on the interior of the offensive line, could play offensive guard, could play at center. He's 6'3", 310, 320 pounds. It's fun to watch his film. For a guy that's 6'3", 320 pounds, he's actually got a very explosive first step that I wasn't expecting, and he loves to drive people. He loves pancakes, so he's going to get his full share of that, especially on the scout team early on. Two other offers that have been extended in recent days are to two Missouri products, one in Jabril Cox and one to Chase Allen. Jabril has a bunch of other FCS offers, Western Illinois, Southern Illinois, among others, and immediately after NDSU extended the offer last night and from talking with Cox, NDSU is now on top, and he's trying to actually come up for an unofficial visit this weekend to Fargo. So if that were to happen, I wouldn't be surprised to see Cox commit shortly after the visit, knowing that spots are limited at NDSU. It is a full scholarship as well, and the Bison are looking at him as a outside linebacker, middle linebacker type. He's 6'2", 6'3", 215 pounds. He's very explosive. Chase Allen from Nixa, Missouri, is actually son of Missouri State, former Missouri State head coach, I believe. And he's a basketball guy that decided that he wants to play football now. He's a very good basketball player. He's 6'7", 220, 230 pounds. And from watching his senior highlights, he's someone that is definitely capable of going to get up, going to be a threat in the red zone for sure. He's very athletic. And immediately following the offer, the Bison are sitting well for him as well. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a team like Minnesota, a team like Illinois or Wake Forest come in late and get a Chase Allen as well. I know that those are three teams that need tight ends as well, but the Bison are absolutely looking for another tight end. And as NDSU fans know, that means Sean Bayer is more than likely, I would say extremely likely, not going to be a part of this Bison 2016 class. He has a Nebraska offer. I talked with him today. The plan is for him to go visit the Huskers in 2 weeks for their game, their final game of the regular season, and I wouldn't be surprised to have the Husker staff put some pressure on them saying, hey, what are you waiting for? You just took your unofficial visit. We want you to be a part of the class. And I know that Sean has aspirations of playing FBS football, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him go elsewhere. Then again, I feel like we talk about this every week here on the podcast, but keep an eye on Kokeef. Minnesota is scheduled to talk with him tonight about an offer, a potential official visit, either one of the two. I wouldn't be surprised to see later on this evening that Ko has an offer or has set an official visit to Minnesota. They're looking at him as a tight end instead of a defensive end, which the Bison have. So it's a very exciting time here, starting to heat up more. I've heard that the Bison are also going to start extending some more preferred walk-on options to a bunch of different kids from the state of North Dakota. So it should be an interesting time, Ross.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see Sean Engel and Allen on the same team at 6'7" and 6'5". It'd be certainly some length and some height that the Bison offense has not utilized in years past. So it'll be fun to watch and fun to follow as obviously signing day is in the spring. So we'll
first Wednesday of February. So I think we're only 10, 11 weeks away, and as Bison fans are accustomed to, December and January is a very scary time, knowing that some of these MAC-level programs and even Big Ten schools come around looking for options in January, and more, how many times have you seen that they've come and tried to get an NDSU guy? So stay tuned to the Bison Report, absolutely. But let's transition to this Bison football team. What a comeback, Ross. It was so much fun to watch that fourth quarter.
Yeah, absolutely. It was very stressful, obviously. If you're a Bison fan and you're thinking about or if you're me and you're thinking about, you know, potentially having to travel to cover playoff games, it was getting very sad in a hurry. That game, you know, had it been a loss, would have kept North Dakota State, you know, with that Thanksgiving weekend bye. No doubt about it, they would have probably dropped, you know, pending obviously a victory against Missouri State. They would have put them at 8-3, and it probably would have made them the 7th or 8th seed, you know, in the tournament. But with a win and a theoretical victory against Missouri State, who have really, really struggled this season, that's going to put the Bison at 9-2. More than likely, they're going to be the second overall seed in the tournament, meaning that they would not meet the number one overall seed until Frisco, and therefore be able to play all their games at home. So that comeback was not only just visually entertaining and made for a fantastic three-hour story, but was so impactful on the postseason for these Bison and so important that it was, you know, hard not to get excited about that victory. Plus the fireworks that the opposing coach provided at the end of the game were equally as enthralling.
All right, let's get into it right now. Pelini doing Pelini things on that last few minutes of the game there. What did you, I mean, for people who haven't seen it, can you describe what happened and what did you think about the whole ordeal?
Okay, so at first I thought that maybe he had a point and they got screwed, and obviously, you know, I am technically a journalist, but I've made no bones about being a Bison fan, and if you want to call me a homer, fine, but the ball was snapped, and the line moved, but the quarterback didn't move. And I got to tell you, that's not a false start. If the ball is in play, the quarterback's just not moving. Now, I wouldn't advise that. I would advise the quarterback to drop back, you know, on most plays. But because of not everybody starting on the same time, it looked like a false start. And Stick kind of panicked and threw sort of a haphazard fade pattern to senior wide receiver Nate Moody, and it was a jump ball. I'm not sure if Stick thought maybe it was a free play or it was a dead ball, but he just kind of threw it in the general direction, and both Moody and the defender jumped up. If you look at the reverse angle, the defender very clearly grabs Moody's jersey and pulls him down towards the ground, making it an uncatchable ball. But Coach Bo Pelini and his brother Carl absolutely lost their goddamn minds. It was just unbelievable. They completely blew their top. We're kind of, I guess, technically able to hold it together while NDSU still had the ball. The Bison took two plays to score. NDSU kicked off with 35 seconds left. Obviously, that score took the lead, and then all hell just broke loose. We were given the explanation today that one of the 15-yard penalties Youngstown State, I guess I should start with, had two personal foul penalties on that last gasp, you know, desperation drive, both on the coaching staff. It was kind of my understanding that once you got a second one of those as a coach, you were going to be ejected. And they didn't eject Pelini. The explanation that we got was that one was on Bo and one was on Carl. So it was a joint Pelini venture to acquire these personal fouls. But after the game, Bo made an absolute beeline for the umpire or the white hat and, you know, gave him 30 to 45 more seconds of what exactly it was that Bo had on his mind. And then at the end of everything, I guess I would say that it was at least a moderately classy move, because it sure looked like to me when Bo went over to climb and he was apologetic about not going straight for the handshake, seemed very congratulatory, and whatever animosity Pelini had, you know, none of it seemed to be directed at the Bison or directed at Pelini. He was just pissed at the officials. So that, I guess, is maybe the one saving grace. But at the same time, I mean, he made a complete ass of himself and had to have embarrassed the university and their fans. But this is, you know, this is nothing new, as you as a Big Ten guy know.
Right. Yeah. This is, I mean, we talked about it on the preview show. you asked me what to expect from Pelini, and fireworks ensued, and it didn't disappoint on Saturday. One thing that actually did kind of disappoint was this Bison run defense. They got run all over for three quarters. Ross, talk me off the edge.
Well, it was the same stuff. I mean, it's the same stuff that NDSU has struggled with all season long. Quarterback read option. You and I said that there was not, or I told you, you didn't say it. You know, I'm not going to lump you in on the blame on this deal, but I told you that their quarterback, Hunter Wells, couldn't run the ball, so they weren't going to be able to move it because he wasn't a threat to run. Well, I didn't know who Ricky Davis was, and Ricky Davis is a backup quarterback that they used specifically to run read option stuff against the Bison, and he and tailback Jody Webb went absolutely nuts. Webb had five carries for 132 yards, averaging over 26 per, scored twice, and also had three catches for 57 yards. He was an absolute animal. Coach Kleiman said today that he feels like Webb is probably one of, if not the most talented kids that they've had to deal with all year. And Davis himself had 11 carries for 61 yards and a touchdown on the ground. So what I thought was going to be a conventional rushing attack was not. And you've got to credit Pelini and his staff. And I know, you know, he's more of a defensive guy, so I should probably credit his offensive coordinator. But they came out and did the things that you need to do to beat this NDSU 4-3 cover 2 defense, which is stretch the perimeter with, quarterback running back option plays. And that's how they got going. The conventional stuff didn't work at all. You know, we talked about their leading rusher and one of the leading rushers in the Valley, Martin Ruiz, 10 carries, 29 yards, 2.9 per. The Bison, as usual, clamped down on the conventional run. But when they went outside and tested the perimeter, the Bison had no answers for three quarters.
Yeah, but what happened in the fourth quarter? Oh, yeah, Ross, they got three consecutive three and outs. I mean, what changed for the Bison to just be able to flip a switch like that?
Well, in the postgame press conference, Nick DeLuca, you know, obviously they're not going to give away any trade secrets, but he said that they made some adjustments, and honestly, at the same time, they just had to tackle better. Kleiman, who is not a coach that ever goes at his players in the media, he said, look, our tackling on Saturday was horrendous, and Brian Sean, who's part of the media group there, or part of the broadcast staff, you know, kind of tried to put it nicely, and he kind of got called out by Kleiman. Kleiman said, yeah, you're being very kind. Our tackling was horrendous. They didn't tackle well all day. My guy, Robbie Grimsley, struggled in a big way to make tackles in that run game. And it's so important. And part of why Chris Board got moved to linebacker, so important as a safety in that defense to be able to defend the option. And Grimsley had a rough day. Pierre G. Tucker didn't play particularly well in those first three quarters. Those outside linebackers, those safeties, those are the guys that played much better in the fourth quarter. They made some adjustments, and they really, really played well. Specifically, I talked about the ridiculous rushing average for Jody Webb. Well, on the final three and out, they ran the play to Webb that had dusted the Bison all day long, and Greg Menard, on one leg, as we've talked about, Greg Menard absolutely blew it up in the backfield for a five-yard loss. So four of those carries were originally for 137 yards or 136 yards, but there were just adjustments made by the defensive end outside linebacker as far as responsibilities were concerned, and there was no success other than that, honestly, for Youngstown State besides the perimeter rushing game, because passing, they were 9 of 24, averaging 4.3 yards attempt. And on conventional runs, you know, they were under 3 yards per carry. So when they took away the perimeter game, the Youngstown State offense completely shut down. And that's what you saw for the final four drives. And obviously that fourth drive was, you know, the desperation. How are you going to go 88 yards with 35 seconds? I'm not going to, you know, as a Bison supporter, you shouldn't pound your chest about being able to defend 85 yards in 35 seconds. But those other three drives were huge, not only for the game, but for the season.
In one facet of the game that was huge for the Bison on Saturday was their special teams game. You know, your guy, Bruce Anderson, with the 53-yard kickoff return, Cam Peterson 2-for-2 on field goals. I mean, it was a facet of the game that really actually came to the benefit of NDSU in the end.
Absolutely, and you know, the player that Coach Kleiman was even the more specific about was punter and kickoff specialist Ben LeCompte. I think on a net average gave the Bison a 12-yard advantage over Youngstown State's punter on a per-average basis. He was fantastic in the kickoff game. And, you know, he's been doing that for them all year. Honestly, he's been doing that his entire career. Such an important player to the Bison defense. But just field position. The last three drives that Youngstown State had were at the 25, 15, and 14-yard lines. And the last three drives that the Bison had were one started in Youngstown territory and the other two were past NDSU's 40. And that part of that is defense, but part of that is special teams as well. You mentioned Bruce Anderson on the kickoff returns. He was fantastic. He had another long one in which he absolutely posterized Youngstown State's kicker. That was called back by what I would say was a pretty questionable holding call. He was great all day. They were great all day in special teams. And that was something that Kleiman said. Look, we're pretty even with a lot of teams in the Valley on offense and defense, so we have to make our bones on special teams to win these road games, and they sure did, and especially on Saturday afternoon.
I think Bison fans know we can't go much farther without actually just glowing about Bruce Anderson. Okay, Ross, take it away.
Yeah, he was fantastic again. You know, rib injury earlier in the season has appeared to limit his reps. Also, his style of running maybe limits his reps, and the power game of Bison football is why King Frazier gets the ball so much, but 31.7 yards on kickoff returns on average and 16.8 per rush, including a 57-yard scamper to open up the fourth quarter and get the Bison within a touchdown. He didn't score, but they scored on the subsequent play. He's just the most talented running back on the roster, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, it's probably good for you to do so. Before we start anything more, but second consecutive game, Ross, where no turnovers. I mean, that's a huge part of the game. What did you think?
Well, it's a big deal when you got a freshman quarterback and running backs that struggled with fumbles in the early part of the season. A huge part of the loss at Montana was fumbling the ball. Part of the reason that the South Dakota State game wasn't more of a blowout was fumbling the ball. And then there were key turnovers in that loss to USD as well. Just taking care of the ball, running the ball, and playing good defense is going to win more often than not in the FCS. And that's kind of been part of what principals have made NDSU so successful over the years. I've been impressed with Stick. I've been impressed with the running backs. Everybody just holding on to the ball and winning the take-give. In a year that, honestly, the Bison defense hasn't created the turnovers that it normally does.
No, and it's good to see that, as you said, if the Bison defense isn't creating the turnovers, you know, the Bison offense isn't giving them away. And that comes from the arms and the legs of Easton Stick. I mean, what did you think out of the freshman quarterback?
Well, just, you know, impressed once again. Youngstown State, like I said, has an offensive coordinator that has been there for a while. When Pelini and his staff came in, they pretty much did not mess with the offense. But his blitz-happy style from LSU and Nebraska went right in there with him. And for a young center in Austin Kuhnert and a really young quarterback in Easton Stick to handle all those pressures and all those exotic looks and all those blitzes was really, really impressive. I can't remember if Stick took a sack in this game or not, but he seemed to get the ball out when he was called upon to pass. And at the same time, you know, you have to credit Coach Polasek. It is honestly unbelievable to me to think of having a 42-18 run-pass ratio in a game that you trailed the entire time, but that's exactly what happened. Stick was not called upon often to throw the ball. When he did, he was judicious with the ball. If he didn't like what he had, he, you know, junked it into the ground and was able to hit both Zach Vrah and RJ Erzendowski on big, big plays, and that's been – a part of the stick arsenal as it was when he was at Creighton Prep in high school. Big downfield plays along with running the football. And, you know, the one thing that everybody said that Wentz had that stick we didn't know was, can he come back? Can he take a team that's down and needs a couple of touchdowns in a big game? Can he make that comeback? And boy, did they on Saturday afternoon.
All right, so let's move forward a little bit. I know you were live at Coach Klieman's press conference this afternoon. What did you learn?
Well, I learned that they're dealing with the flu, and it's pretty serious, actually. They have a levels of concern about, honestly, just practice bodies. One of the examples that they gave was, you know, if two defensive ends are out with the flu, we can't have Greg Menard take 60 practice snaps. It's just not feasible, and that's become a problem. Tight end Luke Albers had it, and in fact, it's become a mandate. I was told that the entire team had flu shots 10 days ago in order to, you know, kind of prevent this from happening. But tight end Lucas Albers, they tried to get him to be able to go on Saturday. He was too dehydrated. He honestly couldn't play and had nothing to do with the injury. It was literally the flu. And now it's kind of passing through the team. And they're hoping, obviously, to get everyone through it and play the game against Missouri State. But as is basically, you know, common knowledge, the weight loss could be a serious concern. You get a kid who is in a strength training program and in a dietary program where most of what they have on them is lean muscle, and you throw them out of that for 3 or 4 days and you dehydrate them with the flu, you could have guys dropping 10, 12, 15 pounds in a week. They're very concerned about weight loss, and they're very concerned about having the numbers for practice. You know, thankfully they've got a 1-9 Missouri State team coming in, but the flu is not the only thing they're worried about. Nathan Tangway had a MCL sprain in the game on Saturday, and Jordan Champion hurt his hamstring. They're both expected to maybe try and give it a go this week. Obviously, you know, Klieman would never intimate that Missouri State wasn't good or that they would rest these guys because they feel like they can still beat Missouri State, but I think that also might play into it. Obviously, anybody that doesn't play in a win against Missouri State would get 2 weeks off because of Thanksgiving and not having to play until that following week. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Tangway and Champion sit. Now, the Champion thing is interesting because it might force the Bison to play more base. Obviously, they feel very, very comfortable in Jalen Allison as an outside corner with C.J. Smith. But Champion is such an effective nickelback. You might even see them use Chris Board in a big nickel situation. Use him maybe as a third linebacker instead of Pierre G. Tucker. But the Bison are not as deep at cornerback as they are at other positions. You'd have to think that maybe freshman Dakota Reed could possibly be involved there. But if Champion can't go, the Bison nickel package is interesting and who that inside corner might be. So that'll be something to watch, as I feel like the defensive tackle rotation with Aaron Steidel and Grant Morgan is possibly a group that could get by, especially against a team as weak as Missouri State. And just based on some offhanded comments from the press conference, I'm also becoming less and less convinced that we'll ever see Carson Wentz in a Bison uniform again. And that's kind of sad. That they've been on such a roll with Easton Stick that, you know, I can't imagine they're going to rush Wentz back into anything. But at the same time, he's a kid with transcendent talent at the FCS level and a guy that Bison fans are going to get to watch on Sundays for years to come. And at the same time, you know, they have to respect him and obviously his pre-draft process as well. I'm not saying that that's going to be a deciding factor, but at the same time, if he probably shouldn't be playing, than a kid with an NFL future, that's maybe different than like you saw with Grant Olsen 2 years ago, where he knew, despite the fact that his ACL was torn, that he would rather strap up and play because he was not going to play in the NFL. This was going to be his last chance to play football, and he wanted to put on a knee brace and go. So that's one the last thing that I took out of today's press conference is just how worried I am that we honestly might not see Wentz for the rest of the season.
That would be, I think, a lot of Bison fans are looking at you with wide eyes right now, Ross, says I think there were a lot of expectations that you know, Carson would be coming back for the playoff run, and even as well as Easton has played, it's not every day you get a first, second, third round draft pick at the quarterback position at the FCS levels. So, wow, that would be, you know, I hope you're wrong for once, Ross, but what do we have coming here in the next episode of the Bison Report Radio Podcast?
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and record that on Thursday or Friday. You and I are kind of still working that out. But I'll have the breakdown of what I saw. Obviously, I don't expect much of a competitive game, but just what I saw from being able to see the Bison men in person again against Valley City State. We'll talk a little bit about the seniors. It's going to be senior day on Saturday. We'll go through a little bit of bracketology, a little bit of FCS bracketology. I probably won't give out, you know, like an entire 2014 bracket, but just sort of from what I've been seeing and who I think might win on Saturday, what the road for North Dakota State might look at. And then obviously, as we've done all season long, we'll preview that Missouri State game.
Sounds good to me. Well, for Ross, for I, we encourage you guys, again, if you like what you hear on the radio podcast here, we encourage you to subscribe to BisonReport.com. It's less than $5 a month, folks. It's a cup of coffee in the morning, and it really goes a long way to supporting us. And we'd also love for you to subscribe and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or however you did find this podcast, as that helps as well. So for Ross, for I, we thank you guys for listening, and go Bison.